think we saw the people listening to the ground last week. One of the questions, which is on the sheet too, whatever we didn't cover, you can basically read on your own. It's self-explanatory, but there is one day out. There's a post-it or two that says you can use a microwave for kosher livers. It's a day on Mi'ut. Very few people agree, and I don't. The handouts are there in here. I don't suggest. I don't know how to get the codes. I don't know what to tell you. I don't have a clue. There's a lot of buttons. And wow, it's cool.
Start pushing.
Anybody wants to give it a stand? I'm not going to need anything. You can imagine you need like one button for a microphone, it was like a whole operation. Oh, it's not plugged in either, do you? Okay. Anyway, the point is a microwave is a non-starter. Hotels do use convection ovens. Yesh poskim shemekablim. I know like the Rabbanut does accept it. I don't know what the Medatzim do. I didn't check. I don't know. The point is, I hope the message came across last week that livers basically, you have to remember, it's kashering, not just cooking. It's serious issues. If you're not sure, just ask the Rav, and everyone will develop their own minog in their home, whatever's acceptable to them. A lot of wire, but no outlet. Pretty cool. Oh, that's smart. Okay. We discussed Chodesh last week. Feels like it was 5 minutes ago. Amazingly, every now and then something gets published that creates a storm that you can't believe and no one can prepare for. The Rabbanut Reshit put out an update last week. One page is all the Cheerio cereals. Until it got to the Rabbanut's update, which goes to Mashkichim around the country, and the instructions are that they're to remove them from all the shelves all around if they're past the store codes. And apparently, the American cereals are being returned to Osim in quantities that they never have had before, even in previous years where they sold Kaddish as well. Osim's added in line screaming and yelling, threatening to sue everybody. They're going out to the OU, they're going to Robert Herman in America. They're just shooting in every direction to figure maybe they'll get something. But the cereals are going back. Interestingly, I got a copy of the Yeshua from the Chief Rabbinate for Osim. General Mills, and it lists the cereals they're allowed to sell, and it says that the cutoff date is November 2nd. If you look at the codes that we discussed, I just checked it again before this year, the actual cutoff date is about a month earlier. So the Rabbanut tells Osim they can sell it, they're a month off, and on top of that, Osim's going even a month past that. So anyone can blame whomever they please, it doesn't really make a difference, but this, we're just discussing. With someone before, if you're buying American products, you really need to take that file that the shul sent out, open it, read it, and know the product codes. If not, I advise you don't buy them because it doesn't appear that the Rabbanut or Osim are doing their job. Okay, tonight we're starting Chalavi, dairy. If nothing else comes out of the dairy lecture, which will probably continue into next week, for me, I hope it just gets to the point where I don't get any more questions. It's only dairy, what can be wrong. So if I accomplish that, that's a great deal. All right, I'm skipping over the beginning. This is the introduction about Chalav, the Torah, what we call it, what you see, what you hear. What is important, again, this is all background information. There are many traits for an animal, as we learned about a woman. And as such, you need serious hashgacha. And as such, in the areas of Yisrael, they do have, especially trained mashkichim. Last year, for those of you who here remember Rabbi Boaz's lecture, he says, Teruva mashkichim go out, they get deep, if a cow needs surgery, they watch it, and they determine if the cow is still kosher or not. The problem being is that once the cows have surgery, and it's a very common procedure today, I think in areas of Yisrael, it's like 4 to 6% of the cows need it. It's something they put a choke on, they put a sharp object into the, I think it's the fourth stomach, the abu mason. They basically, it's a gastric, they will leave gastric distension. What's the point? The point is, once you put a, you infiltrate the animal and you put something sharp inside, if you pierce one of many organs, nicking the intestine, the lung, or a lot of different organs, the animal becomes a treif for it. You may not know it. And that means the milk from that animal is now treif. It's not a chumah, it's not a treif. So that's why the inyan with the surgeries is very, very difficult. Now, by Rubens, Hashkocho, Elechavedit, Landau, everyone has mashkichim that watch the surgeries. This is, as we go along, you'll see this is one of the big intentions now in the United States, because they don't have anyone watching surgery. Not to my knowledge, anyway.
So what can we do?
What can you do? You don't have to do anything. You buy milk with a hefsher, and there was a rav mashgiach, not a shkacha, which observed it, decided the animal's fine, and you trust the hashkacha. You trust it for everything. You trust it for Shabbos, you trust it for surgery, you trust it for ingredients, packaging, so you don't have to do anything. Drink the milk.
You're saying that the different hashkachas have different standards.
Rabbi, I don't want to mention name because I'm not 100% sure, I confuse it, but like some of the higher end hashkachas, for example, if the cow had a C-section, that cow is possible, is no longer ma'ui to be in the milk herd, and that's the end of it. Because they feel a C-section, there's just too much cutting going on, too high a risk of penetrating or nicking an internal organ, and you'll never know. So they just take it out. Other hashkafas say no, we watch, we determine. Others make them cut. It's sort of like the tzomen agid with the chicken. Some cut on top of the drumstick, some cut at the bottom, if you recall it, the yellow part. It's the same with the surgery. Some of the different agencies say cut here, some say cut here. I don't think we need to determine either way which is better or worse. If you trust the hashkafas, it's a legitimate hashkafas, it's fine. But the point is, if they have a doubt, or for any reason the surgery was done without a mashgiach being present, that cow is taken out of the herd and is no longer permitted to be used for milk. Okay. There's the big issue, and I will get into it because for me it's a big inyan personally, so I always push it, like to thank people up as well. But people come to Eretz Yisrael, sort of get a little, I won't even say confused, because confused would mean that you have an awareness of the different issues that you can be confusing. People basically think everything is Chol Yisrael, and basically from the large milk companies, as far as liquid milk goes, it is Chol Yisrael. So what's the issue? So the big issue in Eretz Yisrael is Shabbos milking. That's the big issue here. Okay, and this went back to Chazon Isha's Piskei Aloch Aret, the Rav Kook in the beginning of the state. Everyone worked on this, ruled on it. Today, as Rabbi Boaz said last year, Tanuah made enormous progress, and basically today many places milk in accordance with halacha, because of the Yom Tzav by the Chaim, they have to relieve the animal, so the milking is done for the animal's sake, not for the milk. So if it's an Eda Chavedin or Avlandah, or in the Mahadrin Tanuah HaShemu, the milk from Shabbos is spilled out. It's not allowed to be used. So it's not allowed to have anor from the Shabbos milk. If you buy regular Tanuva, or any other company, we say Tanuva because Tanuva is the largest dairy in the country. If you buy regular non-Mahadrin milk from Tanuva, you're almost with absolute certainty buying milk from Chilul Shabbos. That's a given, because most of the milk in Eretz Yisrael is from Chilul Shabbos. It has Ashkacha, it's kosher. And it's kosher, and they're relying on the Hetero for the Chilul Shabbos, but the Hetero are not widely accepted.
When you say
Chilul
Shabbos,
that
cow becomes a
Chilul
Shabbos cow.
Not a Chilul Shabbos. All the cows are milked, and they're milked by machine. They're milked according to the different protocol that have been set up for the milking procedure. But that milk is not supposed to be used. The milking on Shabbat is done to relieve the cows. It's not done to benefit from the milk.
The milk done on Tuesday from
the cow, what happens? It's dumped. The milk that comes out of the cows on Shabbos.
No, he has Tuesday.
I'm asking from the non-Mahadrin.
One of the issues is Shabbos, and we're getting on the Shabbos. Also, I will remind you, and I think I wrote it to Rabbi Boa last year because we discussed it. Years ago, people who didn't want to have Shabbos milk would learn the dates on the bags. Now there's also cartons. But they learned the different codes, which are not that complicated. They said by Wednesday I could buy milk. And then I know for sure it's not from Shabbat, and I don't have to buy my husband, so what's the difference? And Rabbi Boa said, absolutely not. Not only that, you can't buy milk on Thursday. Because today with the refrigeration and the processes and everything is super modern and super high tech. The milk can sit for days, and you really have no idea when you bought milk, when it came from. I mean, you absolutely don't want to have milk from Shabbat, you just have to buy Mahadran milk. That's the only way of knowing with absolute certainty.
On the Mahadran dance, the Shabbos milk is not like the chickens which go over to the Rabbanan dance.
What's on? I don't need them, sorry.
On the chickens, if there's a question, it could jump to the...
On the chickens, a question, it jumps to the Rabbanan.
And on the milk, the Shabbos milk, it's all spilt or it goes over to...
Goes to the non-Mahadran. That's the point. And actually, Tanuva, when I asked them, told me the Mahadran will not use Shabbos milk, but the Tanuva, Rav Ritman appears to say it's more of a chum on his part. He doesn't think the heter is obeyed. Okay, but he thinks it's more of a chumah, so he feels. So basically, if the milk mixes up, Shabbos milk, non-Shabbos milk, they will still use it for tenuva. Whereas, like the Eidah Haredi, you can't have the farm. The Eidah Haredi will only work with the Shomer Shabbos farm. That's why if you're marking an Eidah Haredi product, for example, over the last year and a half, you've had several bouts of shortages, whether it was milk or butter. Different products just run dry, and they say that's life, nothing we can do. We're working on a new one and working on getting more farms. But they only will work on the Shomer Shabbos farm, absolutely no exception. They're very concerned about foreign workers, the volunteers that come to Kibbutzim, for example. Many of the volunteers on Kibbutzim today are non-Jews, they're goyim, and they're milking the cows. So the Ada feels this may also compromise the Chol Yisrael. So the bottom line, if anyone wants handouts, there's more here. The bottom line is, there are differences, again, like always in the standards. Tanuva, by and large, like I said, is always Tanuva. It's upright and it's transparent. It explains everything it does, not hiding anything. And it tells you that Mahadran is not Shabbat milk. If on rare occasion milk got mixed up, we may use it because it's a heter as far as they can say, like Kula. And other than that, they say Shabbos milk is Shabbos milk, regular milk is non-Mahadran milk. And that's the way it goes for Tanuva. That's only as far as the plain milk. If anyone, if your Hebrew is fine, just go to the Tanuva website, click up for Kashrut, and you literally spend several hours going from column to column on dairy and cheese and milk, meat, eggs, Pesach labeling, everything is spelled on the website. And it seems to, I don't know if it updates in real time, but I do check it periodically and see changes, obviously, to keep it up to date. They do a splendid job. It's in the handout, I think. Tanuva here, it's down here, number 8, page 2, note 8, 7, 5, the website. But it's only in Hebrew, there's no English on the website. Okay.
Did you say that the majority of milk is not Mahadran is
Shabbos? The majority of the milk in the country is not Mahadran milk.
No, but therefore, the majority of that milk is?
Not majority, you assume it is. Because there's no reason to assume it isn't. Because they use the Shabbos milk, they use it.
But at most it would be 1/7, right?
What?
At most it would be 1/7, no?
Why?
One week out of the, one day of the week, no?
I don't know how many they milk one day, I have no idea. I hear what you're saying. You could say it's X amount of percentage. I have no idea. I don't know. And let's say that milk is divided up into different products. Maybe it goes to cheeses, yogurts. Maybe it's not just used for milk. I don't know. I'm not going to guess, speculate. I have no idea. Another issue where they differentiate between the different Ashkachas, Tanuva is very big on the cameras. Okay, Tanuva uses Mashkichim and cameras. From what I understand today, the primary Ashkacha is done with the cameras, closed circuit TV, monitoring all over the place. They have a command center, and what I've seen of it, it's quite impressive. You know, they say there's a solid argument for the fact that cameras can see a lot more than one person with two eyes. They're moving around. It's a wider angle, watching the screen, you can watch several cameras, but a Mashgiach can't keep running around the barn or the milking facility. So the cameras are big with Tanuva. Eidah Haredit, I believe, uses both as well. Abbe Landau, unless he's changed from what I recall, is a big anti-camera person, doesn't believe in cameras, and substitute for Mashgiachim. Again, I'm just giving you this general information. It's I don't think it's relevant one or the other. There's Gedolim that say one is good, the other one says the other is good, some say yes, some say no. It's just background information. I don't think it makes or breaks the Ashkacha. But there are a lot of cameras being deployed today. I think it's becoming more and more popular because the bottom line is it's cheaper to put up cameras than it is to start hiring mashgichim and have them running all over the place. Also, the hashgachas all watch the cameras once they're shot, but some poor guy, that's his job. He doesn't go for pizza Saturday night. He goes to watch the computers. And they don't go through the entire time, but they have some kind of a formula to do random checks of the films. And they watch that nothing was done Shabbat that shouldn't have been done. They checked it, and all the hashgachas do it. Not just milk, all the parts of the industry also. Mazir Shabbos, a lot of mashgichim wanting to watch video. Actually, could be a good headline. Mashgichim caught watching videos. I wrote about the C-section. So that's Badatz Mahadim, Rahubin, Badatz Eid Chavedit, and Rahudul Landau. Obviously, they will all not use a cat that has a C-section, Tanuva will. Okay? And again, I'll be Whitman when I asked him, he said, so a C-section to him is no different than any other surgical procedure. He said, if I have a trained mashgiach, he's watching the procedure, he's comfortable that there's not a suspect that this cow is no longer kosher, so I don't have to automatically disqualify anything, why bother? But that's the logic behind that. Okay, when you get into the, once you're past the liquid milk, and I will add here also with the liquid milk, I think we mentioned Hagadas, I don't know if we did or didn't, but I know that became a big to-do in American neighborhoods because the Rabbanut put out a bulletin on that, number 7, and Hagadas is being snatched up and sent back across the sea or something, I don't know, it's probably being sold somewhere. The Rabbanut does not permit Chol of Akko in the form of liquid milk. That's the whole thing with Hagadas. It has nothing to do with, it has Hashgacha, it doesn't have Hashgacha. It has a respectable American Hashgacha. But it also, ice cream is made from liquid milk. Chocolate, on the other hand, is made from powdered milk. The Rabbanut does permit powdered Chol of Akko, but it doesn't permit liquid Chol of Akko. So because someone bought an ice cream, and it was liquid milk, that was Chol of Akko, it got ousted. So the question is, and a lot of people have written to me actually, how come Hagadas has other products as well, we all know. I can't say it with any kind of authority, but to me it's just another, there's a lot of quid pro quo that goes back and forth between the OU and the Rabbanut. There's definitely an element of politics many mixed in with it as well. But in this case, the politics can be defended because the chief Rabbanut, the halachic rulings that it follows is they don't permit Chol of Akko from Chutz La'aretz. From anywhere, they don't believe Chol of Akko.
What are those stickers on the back of the...
You will see stickers that say, I've got Chol of Akko and chocolate.
And
powder. Don't know. Hagadas was not supposed to be sold. They found it. The truth, you'll always find a Hagadas. Whatever the product is that's on board, you'll always find it in local Makolas. You'll find them in stores in the Hanof and the Beit Shemesh and the Viper Gun and these kinds of neighborhoods. But they don't make their way. When the Rabbanut says something's not allowed to be in it, it doesn't have any shul, Rabbanut Reishit Yisrael, it can't go to the major distribution network, which means you shouldn't see it in Mega, and you shouldn't see it in Supersol, and they saw the ice cream cart. That's what started this whole thing. So they cracked down, from what I understand, they did a pretty good job removing it. I don't know, I guess people have to deal with Ben and Jerry's instead. I don't know what to tell you. Okay, the cultures are generally manufactured abroad. Great care is taken to ensure that they're created in kosher fashion, not that shalom from non-kosher source. Remember, cultures, even though they're microscopic, and at least I, for one, don't understand a great deal about them, but they're all living organisms, and there's a lot of halachic issues involved. I'm on page 4, if I'm number pages. It's among the pages. Is it 4? Yes, it's 4. Okay. So cultures stemming from non-kosher soil are not to be used in the Tanuv Mahadran products. Again, plain milk is the simplest of all the formulas of what we're talking about. Once you leave the plain milk and you start getting into anything, whether it's yogurts and on, it gets increasingly complicated because there are a lot of items inside it. In addition to the processing, and in another 3 years, I'll be eating down the street to add it to it as well. Regarding enzymes, a microbiological mahadran process is used presently, which eliminates many of the past concerns. Also eliminated a lot of the coolers. The Eid HaRedit, I know, in the dairy industry, it works very closely with Tanuva, and they've developed, I would assume they use, Tanuva has resources, the Ada has its own too, but Tanuva and the Ada Chavedit do have a lot of cooperation in the dairy field, so that's one of the reasons things move ahead. Oh, I even got that. They're in conjunction with Ada Chavedit. The LGG developed with non-Chol of Akko, they still be classified Mahadran, because according to the poskim, it's bottle because it's over thousands to one. Nevertheless, such a product will not bear the Rabban stamp. I try to write some of the things to show that I happen to be a fan of Tanum, but it has nothing to do with what I do or don't use, because I enjoy companies that are transparent and are legitimate. And Rabbi Bittman, I think, has done a splendid job over the last 2 decades or so building Tanum to where it's gotten, although many people have a lot of criticism against him. I would imagine some of the criticism is also tied to the fact that he was a kippah sugah. That's as opposed to many people who drink to move it. Ooh, yeah, a kippah sugah, he might stop. The point is, he's an expert in the field. He's been working with the dairy industry for at least 2 decades, and he's accessible as well. You can just pick up a phone and call him. You can email and speak to him. So this is a person I think who exemplifies what a Rabbi Masha should be of a major company, and his team seems to follow suit. I'm in touch with 2 other people on the team. They're both basically the same way. Vegetables and fruits introduced in some of the products that only after rigorous processing to eliminate concerns of insect infestation. You may remember last year, I think it was, not the Mahajan like, but Strauss has some kind of a bio yogurt with, pretty sure it's with figs in it. And they put out, the Rabbanim put out an alert, I think it was last winter. And basically the yogurt was infested with bugs. So this is, once you're getting into yogurts with fruits and vegetables, proper cleaning of those items introduced into them are very important. Gelatin is a very big thing in Eretz Yisrael. I will comment on it a little bit, because I like going off the subject, but also because there's, it's one of the things I enjoy reading. There's like endless volumes written about gelatin, and the famous Hetzer was like Tzvi Pesach Frank, and at the time when he gave the Hetzer, so I think he was already about a sugar juice line, but when he gave the Hetzer, he was referring up even to the Velos of Trefos. At that time they were taking bones from Tref Shita. The bones had to sit for 12 months. The bones, I'll backstep a moment. What the problem today is when they talk about or Pesach Frank, these are the things that aggravate me, because we're given partial information. That's all. But Frank Zitzal, when he gave the Heta, he stipulated several things. One of the things were the bones had to be totally free of any meat residue. They had to sit for a 12-month period to dry out, to really become like hustled out dry. And then they had to be bathed and worked in with a lime solution, a caustic solution. So by the time these things became gelatin, he was confident. First of all, if you know what kashrus, if something sits a year, 12 months passes, that's a big heads up as far as using things, and years passes, etc. So the bones had to sit a year, they had to be free, they had to be dry, they had to be treated with this caustic chemical. And then he said, if you made gelatin, there was no longer an issue that the bones came from the Balaam Trafer, because they didn't resemble an animal bone anymore. There was no longer an issue if it was part of a bustery. It was part benign powder. And the other side of the coin, surprisingly, even though Professor Frank was the chief rabbi of Shalom, Rav Moshe Feinstein and Rav Kutler, I don't remember the third, one of the Gedolim of America, but those two for sure rejected the Heta, never accepted it. No matter what anyone did, they said absolutely not, this Heta doesn't work for us. Over the years, things evolved on Hebrew, and now there's something called Colatin, which is a trademark. Colatin is basically a bovine gelatin. It comes from animal bones, from steel, from bovine, but it has no yuheshin. It's no longer from trash shvita, it's from kosher, mahadrin, or yushvita. So the OU is pleased with that and happy, because here we have, if our face our friend said it was good then, Allah has come of a common today, it's good. The only difference is nothing sits for 12 months anymore, nothing's bone dry, literally, and nothing's being caustically treated. So to say that the head to cover them, you know, me, small as I am, without the right to do so, I say, it doesn't work for me. You know, what was done years ago is not being done today. But nevertheless, it's the difference is this gelatin comes from kosher shkita, and the whole process being done with Ashkocha, obviously. In Eretz Yisrael, it's more or less, we'll say the Haredi market, or the Dots marketplace, whatever you want to call it. It's a non-starter. Bovine gelatin is not acceptable. Nobody wants it. And over the years, they've developed fish gelatin from fish skins and bones. So So if you're buying any Vedas product, the only gelatin that will be introduced into this fish. Under no circumstances will any of the Vedats accept bovine gelatin with any hash bars or with any shkita, then I need to see. It's minogay, which is thoroughly important. You don't use bovine gelatin. So you should understand that these are some of the differences in the Mahadra and non-Mahadra if it talks to you. One of the big places where this comes up, by the way, is the candy industry. There's an enormous amount of gelatin using candy. So when you go to all these stores and you're buying these loose sweets with different asherim, many of them from the United Kingdom, if you do care and you don't want to eat bovine gelatin or comply with it, minogets, or whatever it is, or you don't care, you're fine. If you do care, then you need to write to the different asherim and say what kind of gelatin is used in this. Sometimes if you see the sealed bags, we'll see like Mahadran KLBD, which is the Kashrus Division of London Basin, that they're only using Mahadran gelatin or fish gelatin. Sometimes it says nothing, just a point to know. Gelatin is used in the dairy industry, in a lot of the creams and yogurt. It gives it that smooth and viscous effect. It's used in the baking industry to make the cream stand up when you go to hotels and all these pastries are like, yeah, that's gelatin. Gelatin is also used in the juice industry. They take cloudy apple juice, dump some gelatin in it, bingo, it's nice and clear, everybody's happy. So gelatin can pop up anywhere, which is one of the reasons, by the way, like I say, you need a hash of everything. They tell you 100% pure fruit juice. Depending on the country of origin, they may or may not be allowed to introduce any grape juice or gelatin to it in certain amounts, and you have no idea. They're calling it pure, and you can be drinking something you don't want to drink it. So you need to be aware. Gelatin plays a big role in the conscious industry today. Okay, gelatin is used in products, but always in a quantity of less than 1 to 60, so for those that want to rely on wheat till they're covered there. And despite the availability of bovine gelatin in Ashkocha, Tanuva will not use it. They use the stuff from the fish skins, which is significantly higher cost, and it's not as readily available, but that's what we do in Eretz Yisrael. When you buy Tanuva, again, in Beit Shemesh, in Yerushalayim, it's not as commonplace, although depending on what neighborhood you're in, it will change. I go through here and list it. If you look inside on page 4 of the large box, I'm not going to read it, but the different factories, when you see Tanuva, where it's made, will tell you the Hashkach has changed from plant to plant. And there's a lot of significance to it because the Mahadran sort of falls away. A lot of the hard cheeses are not Mahadran, a lot of the plants are not under the Tanuva Mahadran, they're under Rav Whitman alone, but not Rav Whitman Mahadran, Rav Rav Whitman. So you really have to read each item if Mahadran is important to you. Sometimes you'll see, but Ma'asha Arab Tanuva, Ma'asha Arab Whitman, they won't say Mahadran. Rav Whitman in his capacity is the, call him the chief kosher officer for Tanuva, gives Hashem on different levels for different products. And once again, it's written on the wrapper because you need to look. And many times the differences in the labeling are very slight. And if you don't really look, you may not catch it. Yeah.
How can we rely on a Hechsher given by the
factory? Excuse
me? How can we rely on a Hechsher given by the factory, given by themselves?
How can you rely on a Hechsher given by the factory? It's a valid point. But I would say, in Israel, the answer is much easier than it might be elsewhere. How can you rely on the hashgacha that no one's watching the store? Any hashgacha you're buying from, no one's monitoring everybody. No one even knows what the standards are by law. Everyone just buys and assumes whatever one assumes. I don't know. You're saying that, the bottom line is you're saying, well, I mean, Whitman is an employee of Tanuva. So if you make too much noise, you're out on the, you know, you're done, you buy. It's a valid point. Most of the mashgichim in Yerushalayim, for example, are paid by the stores that they watch. I've always been opposed to it. And when we worked, my limited experience in the United States in Kashrus, the Kashrus was always paid by the Rabbanim, by the Kashrus agency. They came to the store and said, Yankel, meet the store, meet Yankel, he's a mashgiach, like it or not. Now, obviously, there was a major personality conflict. They're not going to go into it. But the point is, he was an employee of the Kashrus. In Eretz Yisrael, it doesn't exist for that. Here, it's an employee of the store. The reason I'm told it is because I think it's bad, so I'm not going to defend it. I think it's the wrong way to start. You're starting on the left foot because, like you point out, you're between a rock and a hard place. You're going to always have to decide how far can you push your conscious issue before you find out your job's in jeopardy. I will say, someone like Rob Whitman, because he's been there for 20 years, and he started out as a loner, and today his whole conscious team is a machlaka. I don't think he has those issues anymore, but the point is, a mashgiach in a restaurant, many. A mashgiach in a restaurant, you come here a few hours a week and see they give me grief. Get out of here, I need to. So the other side of that argument is the Rabbanut says, because the Mashkiach works for the restaurant and he gets all the Tanei Avodah, he has to get the social benefits that any other employee gets, so if you fire him, you have to pay him Pitzurim, and they feel that's a deterrent. For me, it's not a very persuading argument, but that's the other side of the argument. The fact that if I've been there a year, now you decide to throw me out, you have to pay me Pitzurim and everything else, you're going to think twice about throwing me out. They've not persuaded me that I agree with you, and after almost 30 years, yeah, I still think it's not the way the system should run. I think it should be, a kashrus comes in, Mashkiach is paid by the Chameleon, by the Das Mahalim, by Rabbi Ben Shemesh, you introduce yourself to the store, and that's it. But that's not the way it works in many areas. Yes?
I just want to show 100% clear on what the difference is between the product with Rabbi Whitman's
all I'm trying to say is, if it says Rav Whitman Mahadrin, that's one. It's subtle. If it has the Tanuva Mahadrin conglomerate, and I hope I did put a picture in because it's an important thing to be accustomed. Someone put through and see there, I hope. It's probably near the end if it is. Should be. Yeah, on page 16. So if you go to page 16, that's Tanuva Mahadrin. That's now a conglomerate that exists of Whitman, the Rav Mashi of Tanuva, Rav Mordechai Groshrita from Bnei Brak, Bedatz Bells, and Bedatz Huchas Hamsov of Bnei Brak. So if you only don't like one or two of them, you can still rely on the other two. This is a relatively new entity. It used to be Eid Chavedit, I remember not that long ago. You had Tanuva Mahadrin, Bells Mahadrin, and Eid Chavedit Mahadrin. So they did away with Bellas, and they brought in Rav Mordechai Gross, who's a big name. If you shop, this is what I did the Kashrus guide. If you shop in that store, was it Makor Kfuim or something Kfuim in the Rama Center? Makor Kfuim, where they sell a lot of salads. At that time, I remember the salads one that I spoke with was Rav Mordechai Gross. That's the same person. He gives after. So if you have a line on that, so that's Tanuva Mahadrin. That's the highest level Tanuva offers you. Then they say there's Rabbi Whitman Mahadrin, and I cannot tell you what the difference is between Rabbi Whitman alone and this conglomerate, but I can tell you that he's satisfied that he'll call it Mahadrin, but they won't. What exactly is the nuances that separate it, I don't know. And then there's Rabbi Whitman alone, which means just non-Mahadrin, basically. It's kosher, regular kosher. So where do the differences come in? Like I said, the Shabbos milk, the cultures, when it'll be Shemitah, and have to Mechira for the fruit and produce. Also, a lot of additives, not the gelatin, but a lot of other additives that come in. Because the dairy industry, like I said, it's all this microbiological stuff. It's cultures and what are those guys called? Can't think of different words. But a lot of the additives will be either Mahadrin or non-Mahadrin. Obviously, any company that manufactures a product, if they don't need to spend the higher end and buy the Mahadrin ingredients, they'll go for the lower end. And that's legitimate. So there are Rabbi Whitman alone, Rabbi Whitman Mahadrin, and the Tanuva Mahadrin, Eid HaChavedah. So there's basically four Kashriyot. Eid HaChavedah one, outside of the real Mary's, you don't see often. It's not like we have hundreds of liters of Eid HaChavedah left in the ship to Wadi Ala. There's never enough milk for Eid HaChavedah industry. The population that demands Eid HaChavedah kashrus is growing exponentially, a lot faster than the Shomer Shabbos farms are growing and the cows are growing. So they're constantly facing a shortage of milk. In the Kashrus guide, I wrote this for you, a synopsis form, but they had almost signed a deal with a large farm out of Eretz Yisrael. They said it got to the point they're going to start importing the milk if they have to, because they will only work in either not only Shomer Shabbos farms in Israel or farms owned by Goyim that are Mechallel Shabbos, and there's no Chillul Shabbos, it's Goyim's own. And shortly before they closed the deal, they were talking with one of the partners, and he was talking. Oh, he had fond memories of his grandmother lighting Shabbos candles, and they figured out he's Jewish, and they called the deal off because it's no Shabbos. So Eid HaChavedah is actively in the hunt to find additional sources of milk that will satisfy the halacha requirements of that organization.
I'm sorry for interrupting. Please send me feedback if you can't hear well. We may be up here in coming weeks more than we'd like to be. It's more geschmack downstairs. We hope this setup is good. If it's not, if you have trouble hearing because of the noise down there, please let us know so we'll be masakin for next time. So keep those cards and letters coming, folks. Maybe, could I come here so maybe we can talk to you?
Sure.
Okay, so let me know if you can't hear well. Thank you.
If not, probably the easiest fix is another speaker and put them on a different end of the room, as opposed to one. So the difference is, again, as you keep adding components to items, and the cheese industry is complex, and hence the differences in the conscious level. So it's not, the Shabbos issue is primarily the milk. Everything after that, you know, it goes to the side. Okay, Cholav Aqua milk from a non-Jew. Milk that was milk from a non-Jew without Jewish supervision. It's been here with you, but a rabbi, so few, perhaps no one has mixed in. I just gave you some background material about Cholav Aqua, I'm not getting into it. Blaze Nelson, not found, motion that was more expensive than kosher. Okay, that's page 6. I'm not going to read this. If you're regular modern consumer, I will say one of the things I know a lot of the former North Americans know about, if you want to use Eichhoyed milk, it's only available in bags, not cartons. So if you momish one Eichhoyed, you're going to have to continue using the bags with the little plastic holders that you use, but that's it. I'm told the reason is because Eichhoyed said Dead Sea World at large is a poor community. And even adding 5, 6, 7 agavot to a liter is not necessary. Nobody wants it, and no one has a problem with bags. Okay, this page is about Cholav Aqua. Not reading it, not getting into it. It's all self-reading. I want to add here, though. I will get into it. We'll go back and forth. And at the end of it, I attach some inserts in the read. And the shul is going to email you another file, I think, of another half a dozen or so pages. One of the issues that's growing now, and for me it's personally a big issue, but I really work hard in here. I presented both sides because I think if you want to be taken seriously, you have to show both sides in argument. Rav Moshe's Heta, which I'm not getting into, the famous Cholva companies, which is some 40-year-old Heta now, spoke about something that was really in during pressing times for those that were around to realize and remember. Cholva Israel was a rare commodity to be found in only the heart of the Jewish, of the really full Jewish community. It wasn't found anywhere else. It got to the point, as a Gadol Hador, he made this decision with a heavy heart, and we say, not for a Baal Nefesh, not someone who wants to be on a higher level, that if they had to, they could use it. Over the years, this is an oversimplified version, obviously. Over the years, this heta was slowly diluted to the point where he became operating policy for most of the Ashkochas, for the main major Ashkochas in North America and around the world today, to the point that Cholav Yisrael is now viewed as a chumrah, not as what standard that Jews, so just like Jews used to only eat Pas Yisrael, Jews have Bishul Yisrael, all these things in certain countries, even though people are very observant of sort of taking the back seat to luxuries and conveniences and saving a few cents per year. All of that aside, because there's a lot of Talmidei Chachamim who say one way, one say the other way, and I'm not the person to get in the middle to decide any one way to go. What changed about 17, 18 years ago, and that's why I think it's pertinent, and I say it here because I know this is a community where people buy a lot of items that are still manufactured in the United States, items that are Halabi, so it's no bad. What changed about 18 years ago was these surgeries we talk about. These surgical procedures, modern technology enabled the farming industry to come about with these procedures. It's an invasive procedure, as we discussed in the beginning, to leave these cows that could have died once upon a time, or ran juices from the milk industry. And here we're relatively, it's invasive, but a very standard, benign procedure. They alleviate the problem, soap beds it up, and tomorrow she's back in America getting milk again. So it's a win-win for everybody. So he said in Eretz Yisrael, while Rav Landau, Echavede, Tanuv, Rav Eretz Yisrael, they all have standards that vary from one another. The one may cut above the front leg, one a little few inches over. The bottom line is no one does any kind of surgical procedure on any behemoth without a competent Mashgiach watching. This is not a regular Mashgiach, these are specially trained individuals that know what they're watching. If any event, like I mentioned, that Mashgiach came late, that animal is possible by everyone. So in the United States, for example, if you're buying USDA milk or Cholav Aqua from whatever companies are out there today, I don't have a clue, whatever they're called, seal test, I don't know if it's still around. No one is watching these surgeries because there's no halacha concern. Mr. Seal Test doesn't care if you puncture an intestine or if you nick a lung or if you do any kind of internal damage to this animal. The animal now came out of the surgery successful. Maybe they drink a L'chaim. Tomorrow she's back in the herd and giving milk again. So the question came about, what about Chol Akum in America today? You know, Moshe's had to talk about Chol Akum, but it had nothing to do with the surgical procedures that place an animal in danger of becoming a trefa, which means Bamei Tamei is Tamei. So if that animal became trefa today, tomorrow the milk's trefa too. And that no one argues about. This, the argument is what the procedures do. So the Gedolim in Eretz Yisrael, by and large, say you can't drink the Chol Akum in the United States anymore. And obviously we know in the United States, the policymakers, the poskim for the large hashkafas disagree because they're still using it. So the issue comes down to what the percentage of the animals are that have these surgical procedures. If there's a miut matzoi, if there's the number of animals, the percentage of animals subjected to these surgeries present a halachic significant, a miut matzoi that's halachically significant, just like with the chickens, we said we got to a point today because of all the factors we've learned. The shkita at a young age, the faster weight gain, harsh conditions. So they said now there's a miyotu matzoi that enough chickens become treif due to damage to the tzomet agidim, to the, one of the 16 tendons or several of the tendons. Hence, we now have the tzomet agidim inspection. So the bottom of the says, it's obviously it's the same thing now for the milk industry. Now we have a miyotu matzoi for the cows having surgical procedures. So there's no more head to drink Chol Yisrael. Moshe's head is not applicable. So the argument rests that in Eretz Yisrael, I've seen written material given to me by different rabbanim from Mamish, from Gedolei Ador, and Eretz Yisrael, they all said you shouldn't drink it. In America, basically, the large Hashem just basically, if you believe they're warned, they're in denial. If you believe they're right, they say they know the statistics. But they basically say that the statistical realities of cows undergoing these procedures are not representing with matzoi, but it's which ain't matzoi. They're still saying that it's like 2 to 3%. According to the United States Department of Agriculture, I know I have articles from the USDA, and I would assume they know a thing or two about what's going on. They say it's more like 5 to 6%. If it's 5 to 6% already, it's a hard sell to say that these cows should not need supervision or that you can still drink the milk comfortably. I'm just throwing that out. Because I think, and if you don't understand it, ask your rabbanim, because I think it's an important issue today. It's no longer an issue, I eat Chol Yisrael, I don't eat Chol Yisrael. Now it's an issue of, I eat Chol Yisrael, and I'm Chas Yisrael, and possibly drinking trach milk. So it's a whole different ballgame. And I think you need to clarify, you need to understand it, perhaps do some learning, do some reading, most of all speak to your Rav. But I think, I can only say for myself, the days of just having Reese's peanut butter cups or other ice creams from America without understanding what's going on there may not be as easily.
I happen to hold personally as a Rav that it's a huge problem. But it should be said that in the OU, for example, which is like OU Dairy, so there's a machlokas within. Rav Herschel Schechter holds it's Osler. Osler Mamish, I think. He hasn't eaten.
He has his own personal comment.
He hasn't touched milk.
Any dairy price.
Any dairy price in years and years and years. Rav Belsky. So Belsky, the other person for the OU, held that. I remember the tumult. I was a Muncie there. And he held its mutter. He still puts forth its mutter. And the OU. So it just there is a psak from Rebelsky that it's okay, and the OU has decided to follow Rebelsky rather than Rav Schechter. So that should be said.
And like I said, for the sake of transparency and chinuch, I've included in the back here you'll see a series of emails. Okay, the emails, it says Rabbi Aaron Teitelbaum, that's who sent them. Rabbi Aaron Teitelbaum is the Neubit Rav, for those that are familiar with Hashkoch in the United States. They've recently had the AKO, the annual meeting of the AKO General Assembly was recently held. The AKO is the American Kashrus Organization. That's the umbrella group for all the Kashrus in America. People come from all around the world. Kashrus represented from Europe, from Eretz Yisrael, but this is the CRC, the OU, the OK, the KUFK, the STAR-K, anything there is goes to this event. And I want to have the unit, halachic binyanim, policy decisions, a lot gets decided. It's a very prestigious forum. A lot needs to be discussed. So the shul will be mailing it to you because it's just this package is getting too large. I was able to get a copy of the protocol at that meeting. Including the protocol, you will see a back and forth, very clear English. And you will see a few pages in Hebrew of Mokhovoshmov's title bound, the Nomad Zavav. He presented the form with this wonderful material from Shulchan Aruch, from Hasidus, from all different forums, why you must have Klal Yisrael. In addition, and that's some of these emails you see in the back, the Neubitz Rav wrote to some of the prominent dairies in the United States that manufacture the Cholamaka milk. And because if you read Rav Moshe Shuvu, if you remember it, if you've learned it already, he speaks about how the dairy industry is constantly monitoring itself, checking that there's no milk from behemoth tamea in the lot, meaning not camel milk, not pig milk, whatever it may be. And they had to premise on the fact that we're constantly, there's redundancy, there's checks, there's inspections. So the Neumann Torah showed the forum that here's the dairy industries, one's in Wisconsin, one somewhere else, but prominent dairies, they all say, sorry, Rabbi, we understand your problem, you don't check anymore because we know it's counted. The checks, the inspections that were done decades ago when the Hetzer was written, no longer been done. And then there's the response, of course, from Obelsky, Shlita, and other Rabbanim, where they said that there are different checks that are done on the trucks and test tubes and the random checks, so it's not Hefkel Lagamrei. So I think this email, when you get it, you should understand what the background is. And I wrote it in, if you must remember, this is from the AKO, the General Membership Meeting. This is the OU's position, this is the Rebbe Tovah's position. I think the information there, those 7-8 pages, if you'll sit and read them, will give you information that most people in the world never know exists or see it. And it's in a discernible, clear format. And it's wonderful, I think it would help you arrive at some kind of understanding.
If you want to get it, then you didn't give us your email address.
Right, you need to sign in tonight and put your email.
Your email address, and we'll send it to you.
It'll be sent to everyone in a PDF format, and basically it'll be the minutes of this meeting and understand what's going on with Rabbi Ganak, who's the chief operating officer, the chief executive officer of the OU, who makes most of the policy decisions, I understand. And Rabbi Belsky versus the Rabbi Tawab in the back and the forth. And also included the emails, so we should actually see what the one of this are, so we'll go from there. Okay. Now on page 7. Why does milk in again? We're not going to read, but this is a lot of background information as far as what's permissible in farms, what's permissible to be included in this law. So you shouldn't be under misconception, by the way, either. Even in Eretz Yisrael, it's called Yisrael, and the surgeries are watched. Surgeries have to be watched, because that's a make or breaking situation. There are not mashgichim constantly in these farms watching the milk. It's not like, you know, when you learn that often, it says you have to check the cup and it's empty. There's nothing in it. That doesn't really exist. What exists, there are cameras. There is spot checks. It's Yosef Benichnas, Rabbi Yosef gave it. He said the mashgich only has to come several times a month. And that's the industry operates on these premises. You shouldn't think, I don't want anyone to be under misconception and expect like you ever walked into a milking facility, it's not a farm anymore, it's a facility with computers and milking cows, to expect to see Rabbanim all over the place. There is a presence, there's a rabbinical presence, but it's not like every time a milking machine is started that there's a rabbi sitting there watching after any company. Okay, if you look actually page 8, that's where it starts. Here, page 7, right. So page 8 starts the excerpts from this AKA of Adam Gordon, or Winnicott and David for OU. This is, like I said, I won't get into it too much here because I think you'll absorb it better if you just read it on your own. Right. And like I said, if you look at the bottom of page 8, I made that sort of a header, Bar Nefesh Shachmir. Because, again, it really is the Mitzvah. I mean, I'm not 100 years old, but I'm a little older, and I remember the days. I do remember when the Chol Yisrael industry was developing. I remember when the first J&J and the Coca-Cola clone today. It's an amazing industry. But it really was a heter. And that's, to me, to see how it's evolved over several decades, is an amazing thing, that a heter has now become an operating policy for a lot of industries. So one of Belsky's points is that they couldn't possibly supply enough Chol Yisrael milk for all the people that are drinking kosher milk today, meaning the byproducts of milk, the dairy industry. And by the fact that the OU continues giving a hefshar on these, I don't know, it's tens of thousands, I don't know how many products of dairy, he feels that many Jews around the world are eating kosher even if they don't care. But as a result of the OU's tentacles spreading out as far as they have, they're now giving hashgacha in places and Jews are eating kosher even if it's not something they're looking for. So that's also one of his big timers. Rabbi Wolinowitz mentioned, it's true. I'll also add, because I think it's important for people to understand when they say the posting for the OU, in my mind, when someone says someone's a posting, that means this rub decides, and that's what you do. That's the end of it. I mean, if I go to Rabbi Wolinowitz for Shiloh, he tells me what you do it. You don't ask him and say, no. So it was explained to me in depth, and the Metzius is the reality is Rav Herschel Shechter and Rav Yisrael Levi Melsky are halachic advisors to OU. They're not posting. They might post them when it works, but the halachic advisors, that means, for the lack of an adequate term, they will ask each of them wanted to present the halachic position paper. Lahavdil El Vagol is like a legal brief, two different lawyers presenting their view of the case. And then either Rabbi Ganak or Rabbi Elephant, Rabbi Lubin, and the higher ups and all you will review it. And they'll have their view of him. I'm sure there's a lot of view of him. I don't think this is done light-handedly. But ultimately, the OU management makes a decision deciding which way they want to go. It's not like one of these Rabbanim says something that's law for life. And this, the Milk is a good example. Rabbi Shechter, the Pusher, and he writes, it's so personal. He doesn't tell anyone else to accept it, but it's a known fact he doesn't touch David.
That has nothing to do with
Holmes. It has to do with the milk industry in general. It has to do with Schaefer's and Holmes. On the other hand, Rabelski doesn't eat the tuna fish. He has the tuna fish in the groups. On the other hand, Rav Shechter doesn't check the chicken sheet in every stall under OU Asha because he feels it's a non-starter. The chicken sheet doesn't meet his lechatila. So he said, if it doesn't meet my standard lechatila, why would I go bother checking the chicken industry when I know it failed before I get off to the starting gate? So I'm trying to say that it's at some point realize that it's not posting in the sense that they decide something that's halacha moshe b'Sinai. The OU will make its decision, and Rabbi Ganak, I'm told, is quite a Tom Tachem and an expert, a world-renowned expert on kashrus. But the point is, understand the decision making is not necessarily in the hands of these two Torah giants. That's all I'm trying to say.
Usually you get one of them.
Yeah, one would hope so, right. I think it would be a hard sale if they're both against something to try to push in his policy. That would be a difficult sale. Okay. Anyone have any questions at the time? Okay. This gets into the whole thing with the AKA right there. He's damaging babies. I really urge you as much as possible to read these pages in the back. Read the whole thing, but the back especially. And I write here, Rabbi Yisrael Belsky, Sheet the Cholim Stam certification, all agree this worthwhile goal to educate the public as to the reasons they should eat only Cholim Yisrael, but for the foreseeable future, the vast majority of the Tzibur eats Cholim Stam, and therefore the primary question facing the American Ashkotan on this topic is, should we or should we not provide a first-grade Hesha for the hundreds of thousands of Jews eat Cholim Stam, and will we continue to do so? The answer to that question is obviously, of course, we should. Right, the OU is also very careful. They always use always say Cholim Stam, they don't say Cholim Anim. I guess it's yeah.
And we said that in ice cream
was milk industry, to the best of my knowledge, is generally made using powdered milk powder.
Is that more?
Yeah, Pesach Frank, many other posting too, parts of it, you'll read it, you'll see. Most folks can say that powdered Cholim Aqua milk is much less serious than Cholim Aqua milk.
Is it just dried out?
Whatever the reason, it's a halachically different category.
The same natural, the milk itself or powdered milk, is it the same as the liquid milk?
I think it's more than just freeze dried out spray dryers that you use, but there's other things as well. Also used to be, Tanuva's made great strides with that. When I say Tanuva, because Tanuva's basically leading the industry next as well, so it means when Tanuva's taking the giant step, everyone's coming along. That's all. Even though they're working side by side with the Eid al-Khamenei, but it's still Tanuva's the dairy leader in Eretz Yisrael, that's reality. But there used to be that they could not obtain Cholim Yisrael powdered milk, and now they have factories producing that as well. And look, it's a good business decision. Yes, the more Mahadran Tanuva makes, the more they can sell. They can't make enough. It just keeps growing and growing and growing. The Mahadran market, I don't know statistically, but modern art market's grown. It's probably what the fastest growing market in Israel. That's the reason you see over the last half a dozen years. You see, where there used to be, I remember my first Pesach in 1984, And a few months after we came, here comes Pesach. So we get an elevated house and clean. We take our simple shopping cart. Our friends told us to go and buy this hatchet and this hatchet. We get to the supermarket. We walked once, walked twice. The cart's empty. There's nothing there. So I said, where is everything? He said, there is nothing. I said, you're kidding. Nah. Where's the ketchup? Where's the mayonnaise? Where's the hard cheese? Nothing. Zero. Nothing. I remember those days we used to take the eshel and or the gill, that stuff that looks like water with heavy dose of chalk in it. We used to mix jelly into it. That's how you made a colored yogurt in those days. So the Mojave market has come a long way. It really has. And it keeps growing by the day because it looks, since Rabbi Lubinzig over Strauss, it's also growing. They're going in different directions. So it's a growing market, and that's good because as long as it's financially viable, it's financially preferable perhaps, they'll keep experimenting, they'll keep spending money and investing and working to put more Mojave products on the line. There are certain things I will tell you, and it's, I don't think it's a blemish on Teruah in any way, but you should realize because the Eidech HaMeir are also more than making the money, more than giving Ashkocha the way they feel they should, there's also a line that Eidech HaMeir doesn't cross. I think it's Ashkocha line. Like, certain things you don't need, the Dafnish, that's it, because you shouldn't have it. And there's certain products you just don't see that Eidech HaMeir is ever going to have on. Maybe it's too trendy, maybe it's too Western, I don't know exactly why. Like, you'll see Pesach, as the Kashrus guide said, Eidech HaMeir has on principle, the Shita comes to Pesach, they take the Hashkoch off of everything they possibly can. That's the Shita. Comes Pesach, look what people can do with, add one or two things to be nice, everything else the Hashkoch comes off. And if you go shopping, you'll see it. Because A, they feel since Pesach is not Bada Mashishim like Treif and Kosher is, there's Asa B'Mashiru, they don't want responsibility. They also feel there's a certain thing with Pesach, you don't need this one. All these nice trimmings, it's nice to be here, but a big part of it is like I wrote in the manual too. Eidech HaMeir for Pesach will not kasha from treif. They don't want to kasha plants before because they're always worried about the mashal, the chametz. So again, I don't think it's a blemish on Tanuva side or Tawa will pick on someone else or Strauss Ma'adid, whatever it'll be. But you will see certain products on the so called regular Tanuva line, the conglomerate Ma'adid, that you'll never see in Eidech HaMeir. I don't expect to see milk containers in Eidech HaMeir any day soon. They seem very determined to not to stay with the bears. I think maybe it's a trademark for them. I don't know. I really have no idea. Like now I know Tanuva is coming out with a whole line of 5% cheeses, I think with garlic, with all kinds of different things in them. It'd be interesting to see. I was wondering, at this, they supposedly have at least some of them being Mahadran, the Tanuva Mahadran. I wanted to see if any of them will be Eidech HaMeir. So far the Eidech HaMeir, even with packaging, if you notice. And I don't know why. I don't know. I'm clueless if it's a marketing decision, but certain size products you can't get, certain quantities of packages you can't get. They give a hash on what they give. I have no idea why. I really don't. But you know, at least from a cashier's point of view, there's a reason behind everything. There is an inyan, there's two things that the Gemara talks about. So obviously one of the questions is just interesting as well, with Eva Minachai, we learned that you can use milk, it's not Eva Minachai. One of the questions he also asked is, what about Bishul Akum? Milk is pasteurized today, so what about Bishul Akum? And the Rabbanim will also, it's not Bishul Akum, if you're interested, page 11 gives you an explanation. So now they really tried to cover here and put in as much as I can, so when you finish reading this, it's A, you have a better understanding, and B, it's not the, it's only dairy, what could be wrong. A batch of powdered milk, page 12, okay, don't forget you. It's done with spray dryers, and other items are introduced. There's the inyan of kashrut with spray dryers, and also the inyan of what else could be introduced. So the powdered cholov yisrael, or cholov akum milk powder, needs ashkocha, that's the point. No one argues with that. You can't just take any milk powder from the industry. Just like, we'll use an analogy for me from last year. Robert Salo Schultz, if you recall, he's a fellow, the gentleman who works for Landau for 30 years. He's an expert on ingredients, emulsifiers, stabilizers, all that bizarre stuff. So like he explains, if you buy a regular coffee, for example, and a coffee is a good example, I think in many homes, even if they're so-called Madasson, you'll find Taster's Choice or something like a name brand freeze-dried coffee. So he explains that regular coffee, 100% real coffee, that's a name brand, really don't have to worry about because they have their own factory, that's all they make there, that's all they do there. It runs 24/7, no one goes near there with anything but coffee. Once you get to boutique brands, as he calls them, like an exquisite coffee, an almond-flavored coffee, a vanilla bean coffee, or even just a regular coffee, but a very small name, some kind of exquisite brand, those items really need hashkafa because more often than not, the flavorings is obvious why. Anytime you introduce some flavorings to an item, you have to make sure the flavoring or the extracts are kosher. But the machinery is a problem, and unless you're a Redbug, Nescafe, or Taster's Choice, where you have a factory that does nothing but make coffee, you have to be concerned with where did this coffee go to be processed, and where were the spray dryers, what was on the spray dryer before, and was there any kosher blood involved, and even if it was kosher, it could be color, it could be a lot of different things. So again, you know, Rabbi Lewis always says it to me, there's basically anything today needs hashkafa. There's nowhere to go. And the best example is when someone asked me last year about water, I said, come on, water needs hashkafa? So I went to the Eid al-Chabed and they said, why do you have to get a hashkafa on water? So they said, how do you know that they didn't run the water on the plant where they had milk bottled 5 minutes before, and maybe it's color beef? I said, never thought of that. I said, okay, we did. So they feel like, really, they cover all the bases. They think of things that the regular person doesn't think of. So you shouldn't have a bottle of water that you think is carb and it's halavi or something, or whatever else you know, I have no idea. They basically said, the food industry, the dairy industry, is a very big component of that food industry. It has become so complex. And from the little I've seen, and very little, the mass production is at a level that it's difficult to fathom. It's partially difficult to see. You need hashkafas, even the things are called pure, they're not pure, even things that are tahor, not tahor, and everything is mixed and matched, and there's so many different packaging and components, you need hashkafas, there's nothing in there with Eretz Yisrael b'chashkin. I think the dairy industry is in a very good place, and we're doing very well, you know, yachasi, but again, if you look at the chief rabbi, any of you who are shopping in the shuk at all, Machan Yehuda, you get to Yerushalayim, you know, if you ever go Olu L'Regel and you go to Yerushalayim, I speak about it a lot when I lecture in Yerushalayim, happens to be number 6 on the update. If you look at the Jerusalem Kosher News website, you'll see it on the front page. There's a store called Bashar, so that's like a boutique cheese shop. He imports cheese from all around the world. Magnificent store. Just the smell alone, you walk by, it's magnificent. There's wine and cheese, now he's bringing you fish. He has all these unique high-end items that no one else sells. Only problem is the store is not hashkafa from anybody. There's no hashkafa. So everyone wears a white chef's jacket and says bashar, and they have an Israeli flag on the side. Some of the employees have a kippah, most don't. So over time I've spoken to him, it's 2 brothers, and I've gotten to know them a little bit. They don't realize I'm the guy that keeps writing all the bad stuff about them. And I talked to them and they said, how do you, you know, I watch you. The guy says, is this kosher? Yes. Is this kosher? It doesn't have hashkafa. How do you, what do you tell people? What do you base this on? So apparently these 2 brothers feel that they're cheese experts, and they may be. I have no idea, no reason to say they're not. But I will dare say they're not kosher experts. And they go around the world, they do, they go to Greece, they go to France, they go all over Europe, and they bring in these really magnificent, real halachic hard cheeses, stuff that ages forever, stuff that smells when you open it, really good cheeses. And they tell people, this is kosher. And I said, how can you possibly know that? Well, we know, they said, you don't know what's going on in these cheeses with the aging and the micro, and the method that they use, whether it's microbiological or not, you have no idea. No, we know. So, Baruch Hashem, because a lot of people listen to me, some people think I'm just a lunatic, some know I'm a lunatic, and they listen also, but in this update, apparently, there's about 8 or 9 cheeses that are very popular, all different kinds of hard cheeses, and he's been telling people it's under the Badatz Bezdin in London. Apparently enough people, for whatever reason, I've written articles about him a few times, and I hope some of the articles may be prompted people to ask. People started emailing the Bezdin in London, happened to have a good relationship with the Bezdin in London. And they said, what about this cheese, that cheese, stuff I've never heard of. But there's a lot of cheeses, what am I? Cheddar I've heard of, mild cheddar, Somelo, White Farms, Village Oat, Vintage Feta, I don't know, all these different cheeses. The London Bezdin said basically, we don't give a hashalana, never gave a hashalana, we have no idea what's kosher. What are you talking about? What are you giving our name out? So it's gotten so bad that they went to the chief rabbi and the rabbi put out a bulletin on it that this guy's no hashkocha from anyone. And back to the dairy industry, that's the point. Whereas one can drink Chol Yisrael, one can opt to drink Chol Stam, that's your decision. You have a button on both sides of the fence. I'm not anybody's rug. On the other hand, though, Kulam Lo Pligi, there's absolutely no discussion about hard cheese, or any cheese today for that matter. Cheese needs Ashbacha, according to the OU, according by the OK, Kafke, Tanuva, Edechamedic, no one argues. The cheese, Rabbi, one of the experts in the world, Rabbi Zusha Blech. So he writes, I remember when I was a kid, even when Yaakov Yisrael, Rav Schwartz and Tzal, he said you could have regular butter, because butter is excluded from the cheese, from the Pisgah Halacha of cheese. But over time that's evolved, and today they say you need Hashbacha and butter too, because there's coloring, there's flavorings, there's machinery, there's processing. Once again, it's the food industry, the mass production. Okay, so butter is even included today as well. So Halacha's kind of become a hard cheese, where you talk about a maimed, you know, you see the Halacha where you've coagulated the cheese. Once you put a coagulating agent in, whether it's microbiological or it's mamish in the stomach of a cow like Ilan and Gemara, the bottom line is it's not butter 1001, it's never butter. So hard cheese or strafe, strafe doesn't matter how little of the drops you put into it. And Nebuch, if you ever go to the shuk, it's really, I don't know what the word is. You pass the store, it's a beautiful store. If you want to get a look at it, I put a picture up on the webpage too. And, people are shopping, people that appear from all kinds of walks of life in different Ashkafa, from Haredi to other side, from the other side to Haredi, and everyone's shopping and buying. The guy in the last year and a half, actually I had to expand and redo his store, he's so busy, and he has no Ashkafa. Not from a Rabbanut, not from a Badat, not, he doesn't even have a fake Ashkafa, he has nothing. Just says, I have no Ashkafa, and trust me, that's it. And then, you know, and it's funny because in my mind, I think a certain way. Obviously, other people think differently. So, I had this class I teach on Sunday nights. We split up in a few weeks. I took them through the shuk in different groups. And one of the women said, but he sells stuff that nobody else sells. And I said, just listen to what you said. There's another three or four, five cheese stores in the shuk, all of whom have a hechsher. Not a high-end one, have a Rabbanut hechsher. I don't mean high-end insultingly, but point is, it's a Rabbanut hechsher, means they can buy a lot. It was Badat Eda Chavedit Hesh, you don't need a store, you need a booth. But the fact that it's Rabbanut Hesh, that means they can bring cheese in from many, many places. And yet they said, Bashar sells things that no one else sells. I said, doesn't that worry you? That he has no Hashkacha, the other five stores of Rabbanut Hesh have Hashkacha, and they have quite a display, but I would say, I don't know percentage right, it's not a fraction of what this guy sells. He has this humongous, I remember when I used to go through the Lower East Side, for those that know the area, Little Italy, there's humongous wheels of cheese and these long things. That's what this guy sells all around. And people are buying it, you know, and it's, once you're cutting a hard cheese, that nice straight, everything's nowhere to go with it. So you really need to find a shachas, that's all. Cheese industry is by far no exception to the rule. I did mention butter on page 13, and how the need for shachas has been extended to butter by all the industries. I don't think there's any exception to that. Eretz Yisrael is a rule. I think it takes a bit of a head change because depending when you made Aliyah, but how many years you lived out of Israel versus in Israel, we're accustomed to what we're accustomed to. And I think, at least for me, I think it's a wonderful thing. Just like when Shemitah comes, you have this chus, this privilege to be observing the mitzvah chus for Eretz of Shemitah. I mean, we have it every day. There's true mice and ola. But the point is, it's the same with kashas. American, and it's not. It's not a statement condemning any Ashtach anywhere. Just like Eitoach, Motoach, Ashtach, I think the Kasha is the same thing. What the world accepts, by and large, is on a different level than what the Eretz Yisrael accepts. Like the chief rabbi, they won't take, they pull the Havinas off. They have Ashtach, nobody argued. It's a legitimate Ashtach, no one could argue, but they got rid of it. So that's the point. The point is that I think if you keep that in your mind when you're shopping, sometimes it may help making it influence, perhaps switch over from an American brand to an Israeli brand. It's also good for the economy, I mean, it doesn't hurt either. But just a thought, that's all. I'm really not trying to say buy this or buy that. The Inyan of Grinat Akum does apply to the hard cheeses. There are no Eteirim to buy any hard cheese without Hashkacha. Whatever Hashkacha works for you, it's still a Hashkacha. Okay. And there's the hard cheese. I wrote it, you'll read it here, like I wrote it, I think it's interesting. Just one line. As far as the hard cheese goes, it means rennet said is hard cheese. That means even though braai and camembert appear soft, halachically speaking, it's a hard cheese. A hard cheese doesn't have to mean you can beat it with a hammer. It has to do with aging, and it has to be that it was rennet said. That's basically the categories. And there's different Again, ask on Rabbanim. I don't know what people's been talking about. It's not necessarily relevant to this discussion, but how long one waits after Har Chizuk. It's funny because I know people living here many, many years, learned people, that some of them are so pleased that they use the local Har Chizuk because halachically it's not a Har Chizuk and they can have that, wipe their mouth, rinse their mouth, and have meat. And then I have other people I know that bring in cheese from Pusovich for 25 years already because here's the Har Chizuk, and you have to bring the cheese from America because they're not Har Chizuk. Eid will always have our different ways of thought, and everyone will have to find out what them to work. Shemen Yogurt 11, that's what I'm finishing up on page 15. Okay, I'll leave a few to read. That's why I printed these up. It's not that I'm getting lazy, but I don't want to drag this into the night. My idea was to give overview, highlights, explain, and question and answers. And most of this is written fairly easy to understand. If you look at page 16, it shows you on the bottom underneath the picture, which looks much better in color. But you look, you see the five different possibilities for Ashkochas for Tanuba. That should help you along. There's also Tava, much of which is Adats Avodas Yisrael. There's also Strauss, much of which is Badatz Mahadrin Avubin. There's also Yudvata, some of which is Badatz Mahadrin Avubin. So the Mahadrin market's growing. There's also some smaller brands. What's the one? There's one that makes goat cheeses, a lot of goat stuff. Also, a lot of Reliant. Right. So a lot of that has Avubin, a lot doesn't. Again, I would hope that some of the Ashkochas would make different packaging for the stuff that's not Mahadrin, but perhaps the Ashkocha doesn't have that kind of influence. It's very possible. You need to look at each item, you need to check carefully. So the Eidech HaRedes stuff, generally speaking, if you do look for it, has a gold stripe on the top. Like the bag of milk has a gold swirly, and the cottage cheese has a gold thing on top, the 5%, they all have a gold line on top. People told me it's not tough for the truth, it doesn't necessarily carry through it. I've never seen it on any of the other stuff except for that. I want to close with an important addendum, page 16. For those who remember of Pesach, Manos spoke last year in the Shogun. I understand the Shul brought him back before Pesach. I think he gave a lecture on Kashering. The only saying was, maybe you can visualize what we're talking about. He wrote a letter to the OU which appeared in the Daf HaKashrus, the last one I got. And one of the reasons that there's a leniency over the years for butter is because you can't make butter from milk from a behemoth tomato. So since a camel milk can't become butter, camel milk can't become hard cheese. So the hard cheese was a different problem. But the butter, since you knew it had to be kosher milk, the Rabbanim would make it, and they said butter didn't have so years ago. Today we decided to do. Interestingly, and I didn't know until I read this, today with the modern enzymes and catalysts, scientists are able to use camel milk and horse milk that can be powdered. Couldn't make powdered milk out of these either before. And they also, you can make butter as well. So, the OU has a response, which I'll let you read on your own page 17. And the point is, all bets are off. Like, once upon a time, butter was fine, 99 shkachel, once upon a time. And I remember learning chulin, that long ago in Daf Yomi, it says, you know, that a behemoth tomato is lo mamid. You can't make cheese with a behemoth tomato's milk. With a camel and horse milk, you can't. Today you can. Science has overcome that. So the point is, nothing is really, the rules that once gave us some measure of safeguard now don't exist. You need to have an acceptable hashkacha on everything, whatever that actually means for you. That's it. Anyone have any questions? A little while. Yeah.
Who decides,
look, like everything else, the higher hashkacha you go with the conglomerate is not a competition. Follow, it's like it functions as one unit. I think when you see the one with Mordechai Gross, Rav Whitman, Bells, and Badatz Chacham Sofer B'nei Brak, they're not competing. It's one conglomerate that's formed together. They have their different mashgichim that they've hired that work under the Tanuva umbrella. And if there's a request for a certain item in the line to carry that heksha, those mashgichim will check it and give the stamp of approval. Why some will have Rav Whitman? Very simple reasons. One of it could be that one is probably more expensive. I can save money, I can sell it anyway. Just like I give an analogy, it's an oversimplification, but it's the truth. If a guy opens up a store in the other side of Beit Shemesh, where the big is, which I know is not like a particularly Haredi area, why would he ever think to have a Havamina? Why would I get a Haredi Hesh? Spend thousands of shekels a month like Mashkiach standard all day, where no one cares. I can put a Babadook hash in the store and I'll have the same business. And that's a totally, in my mind, legitimate business decision. The end of the day is anyone operating a business is trying to keep overhead down. Overhead also includes cashless, includes electric, water, anything it is. If you want to operate on the other end of Arnulf or my big Shemesh, and if you just have a Babadook, don't even bother opening the store. So you have to find a balance. The stores I've seen by and large, and I think it's 100% legitimate. Look, there's one restaurateur I'm in touch with in Yerushalayim. He's a very straight guy, a fun guy, straight as an arrow. And he's always tried to avoid moving up and up to the more chavedi asher for one reason. He says, hey, it's the limited way you can buy your meat. It's a steak place. He said, I can only buy meat in three distributors, so that means my pricing one against the other is limited. And then if it goes down to 2 or 1, that's it. It's a cartel, you know, I'm stuck, it's a monopoly, I have to buy whatever they sell me, and it stinks. And if the cut of meat's not good, where do I go? I have nowhere else to go. So it's a business decision. So the same thing with the dairy. If it's being marketed to areas where no one cares about Rabbi Gross or Bell's or even knows what it is, they'll sell that. And if it's I don't mean it in a bad way, but we have the political affiliations also do impact people's kashrus. You know, more Datilumi areas, less looking for Eidah Haredi. The more Haredi areas looking more for whatever the reasons. It shouldn't be that politics and kashrus mix, but everything seems to mix with politics in this country, so why should kashrus be, you know, be the one off? So I don't think, it doesn't always necessarily mean a higher level and a lower level, it could also be different. An example is, let's say, with the operation. So Rabbi Rubin says, cut the cow here. Rabbi Rubin says, cut the cow here. And Badat HaMusul says, cut it here. There's one better than the other. Each one will obviously say, my position makes more sense. That's what we're doing. It's the same with the Tzom and the Gidim. You saw, some cut the drumstick, some cut the bottom where the yellow of the foot is. So Eidah Chavayin will say, my way is better. That's what we're doing. And Rubin will say, my way is better. And it's just the difference. It's the Shita. It's a difference of opinion. So I don't necessarily think there is a difference. There is a difference with Eidah Chavayin. And I remember, I asked Rabbi Borrow, if you recall, if you saw him last year, if you heard him last year, he's one of the members of Rabbi Wittgenstein. And we've developed a good rapport, and he trusts me, so he tells me stuff. And I asked him, is the Eidah Haredi Hashkocha to really better, or is it just Eidah Haredi and people that buy their stuff only buy it? Absolutely not. Eidah Haredi takes everything in Halacha to the extreme. There's never been ever anything gets mixed up, it goes out. There's never Chilul Shabbat, nothing. He said, the Eidah Chavayin is definitely a higher level. He said it. The only difference is, not everyone feels that that level is necessary. They don't have to be at that level. And while it's a nice thing, it's admirable, but if it's not available, or it's going to cost that much more, or doesn't enable me to buy certain products, it's not necessary. That's fine also. So the point is not always about buying the world, it's just a matter of where you want to find your cashless comfort zone. Any other questions?
What products are you using?
Powdered milk. Chocolate industry, from what I'm told by the mashgiach when I work in it, is all powdered milk today. And if you look, by law, by the way, any chocolate that's imported, this is also in this, not just chocolate, but in the cereal thing, the Rabbanut points out as well, that even though some of these cereals, I don't know, could it be Nestle's Crunch, is that dairy? I don't know, some of these general cereals are dairy. And a rule of thumb, just so you should know, you need to see the original Hashkocha. If you get Torah Tidbits, the OU publication, usually several times a year puts it into it as a warning as well. They say, never ever rely on just the label, the import label. You must see the original Hashkocha. So on the Nestle's Crunch example, of the bites, it says OUD on the original box. Chalvachim, everyone knows OUD. The Americans know OUD is not Chol Yisrael. On the Israeli one, they write OUD. They don't write Chalvachim. But on the chocolate, by law, if it has powdered chol v'akum, it has to write kosher v'ashnocha blah 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 v'yishor v'avnuk v'yishor Yisrael la'ochlei avkat chalom akum l'man, and only for those that eat powdered chol v'akum. But in the series, whenever they translate OUD to OUD, they never write chol v'akum. And I have people that subscribe to my list that have been writing and screaming and fighting with Rabbi for years, and they're right, because unfortunately many Israelis don't have a clue what the D stands for. Nebuch could be worse. I may not even know it's Mamash Halabi. They just throw it's a D, whatever that means. Maybe it means it's the name of Mashiach. I really don't think they know. I can tell you, ways back, 20 plus years ago, when they used to have American Week in Superstar, before American products were regularly in the Boston Remembrance itself, in Hanof, where he was a prominent postdoc, and there's a lot of Americans, he went to the Shufersal personally and said, either you put a big sign in your window, Hebrew and English, that OUD equals OU Chalabachman, or I will make sure no one buys an American product in the store, and I will put a Cheyam in the store. And they did, they put up a sign, it's the only store that had it. So it's a problem. The labels are not good. The labels are not what the law demands, and even what the law demands is not necessarily sufficient. So you have to really, if you're buying products, we're just speaking about it before, if you're buying products that are coming from abroad, if it's one of the five grains, you have to do your own checking for Chadash. Rabban Uri admits on their own that all this stuff is being sold as Chadash, it's infiltrated the country. And if you want to know about whatever Hashkosim is, look for the usual Hashkosim, Maita, or you Maita, okay, it's not okay, whatever it is, and find out. But powdered milk, back to the original question, chocolate industries, powdered milk, ice cream industries, liquid milk, what else is there? I don't know, there's a lot of things, but that's what comes to mind now. Yeah.
So an oatmeal crunch cereal, oatmeal crunch, it says OUD, but if you look at the ingredients, there's no, absolutely no dairy in it.
Don't know. Because if now they have a new designation, relatively new, if it's dairy equipment, they'll write DE.
So, stop now?
Officially, I thought you were starting
DE.
There's also an OUF. I don't know if you've seen it, but I've seen it. For fish. Like on steak sauce, it has anchovies in it. It's OUF. Right, even though the OU feels it's bottled and you can use it for meat. But there are people that are mocked and know they knew that trace is efficient, and even though it's bottled many, many times, they won't use it, so no, you now have some UF on it. Anything else? Yeah.
You know, you said that you can't rely just on the inputs, but you need to see on the original package.
That's what the OU and OK and all of them say, not me.
So since a few weeks ago you mentioned that, I've been looking at a lot of products, and I've seen that a lot of them don't seem, you said you could never assume that the sticker's covering up the...
Right.
The, I haven't seen on a lot of products, what is the actual original texture? What does that actually mean? That,
that means you know that as Ashkocha. Remember, if it's OU, it's OU. Remember something, if you remember back last year when I lectured, the big thing was then, it was Captain Dr. Pepper hit the neighborhood. And it had big stickers on all the cans, KLBD. We checked with KLBD, they never gave us coffee from. We landed out, spoke to the rabbi who gave who the secret formula, seriously, not being facetious. And he said, 90% that sort of was Mamash Trait. Not that it was not kosher, it was Mamash Trait, because he said several of the components to make Dr. Pepper that are the secret ingredient, one or two of those things to make them kosher cost 4 to 5 times more than it cost to make it kosher. I mean non-kosher, reverse. So he said, if it didn't have Ashkocha, one has to assume the company did a trade because it's 4 times cheaper and not stop throwing money out. And since this was a bogus sticker put on the can, you have to, it landed out being traced to Belgium. My point being, it looked like Dr. Pepper that I remember from America. Cheerios, you don't know where things come from. It talks about it here also, the alert talks about it has to come from Minneapolis. Israel gets things from all around the world, and things that look familiar that we remember from North America, that Hechsher A, B, or C, may not originate. Remember a few months ago there was a thing with Hershey's chocolate. I sent the OU a picture, I found this chocolate bar, and I got the picture, I think, from someone in this community. And we flipped it a few times, there was an Ashkocha anyway, and they traced it, it also came from Europe somewhere. And they said, we're not telling you it's straight, we're telling you that's an Ashkocha, it has nothing to do with the OU. So that's why the OU says you need to see the original Ashkocha, or the Kafke, or the OK. If you don't see it, some people say it's probably under the label, so they're saying don't make that assumption, just buy something else. Because the import division of Avram Shapir Zatzal, the former chief rabbi, started this import division. It was a wonderful unit for many years and operated. Today it doesn't exist anymore, there's no manpower. You call up today, it's Rabbi Lasser. And here he is.
You want an example? So you have the codes, we spoke about it last week, the codes for the Chadash from Rabbi Herman's book.
Here I got hold this week of the Yeshua for the Rabbanu, for also for the different cereals. They wrote they can sell things till November 2nd, 2012. The cutoff date on the cereals they're talking about was a month earlier. And on top of that, also went another month the other way, so it's 2 months difference already. So they gave a permit that's a month off. There's no one doing anything over there. I don't know why, I don't know how, I don't know. Not my problem to know. What I have to know is I can't rely on it. And I have to do my own homework and go and buy the product. That's all. And Baruch Hashem, at least they put out an update on it and they told the mashkis around the country. Anything else? Okay, like I said, the Jerusalem Kosher News, it's a free service. If you want to sign up, you can sign up. Go to the website. If you want to write to me. If I can help, I try my best. And thank you for joining. Next week, in the Yitz Hashem, unless the rabbi changes, it will be... that's next week. Next week will probably be either Bishlakum or wine. And the week after will be the other one.
Bishlakum, Bishisrael, wine.
Well, I never mentioned the fact that I could have Israel on the ring of the tower.
Right.
But that's the specific reason you mentioned it?
No, I did. I said a lot of the power.